Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining me on Out There. This week, we have somebody who wrote a book. Now, it's a fictional book, but it's based on some of his own experiences. We could say that, I guess. Gerald Kubicki, he's originally from New York, and now he lives in Las Vegas. How you doing, Gerald?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
Thanks for calling me. It's early in the morning. You're on Pacific time, aren't you?
That's correct.
So you're at least 3 hours back of me. And he called me yesterday. He thought we had the interview set up, and it was kind of a mix-up, and so you woke up for nothing. What time do you normally get up?
I get up about 7:15, so it was it was just a few minutes early, frankly.
It wasn't too outrageous. How long have you been an author?
I've been writing since 2005, and obviously it's pretty hard to write a book today and get it published.
Mm-hmm.
Things aren't great, but I started writing because I just had a dark time in my life, and I think everybody else has a dark time in their life, and they start writing, or doing something creative. So I started writing, and I wound up writing a lot of my own personal experiences, which are many,
mm-hmm.
and wound up into a book with a killer plot.
Now, this book has ghosts in it. They're part of the plot, right? And you even refer to some of your own experiences in this book.
Oh, yeah. The book takes place in a house that is haunted. And frankly, I grew up in a house that was haunted.
No kidding.
Yeah, myself and my whole family, there were about nine of us that lived there at the time. And, we didn't really know it was haunted. I mean, it was back in the 50s. We didn't really know the difference. So we just knew that there was something in the house that was going on all the time. And we just lived with it. So I thought the ghost that we, as we look at it today, it never hurt anybody, but it was certainly around all the time.
No kidding.
I remember one time I was sleeping in bed, and this is why I never face a wall anymore, but I was facing the wall. I was about 10, and something came and sat on the bed, and I was like, uh-oh. And I was so scared, I was sweating and everything, and I finally got enough courage to turn over, and as I did, it was just like whoosh, and this thing just disappeared into the closet. The closet in my bedroom was where a guy had hung himself in 1939.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so we always suspected that was the ghost. But it's really true. It's an interesting story. The land where I grew up, my father, he was a World War II hero. When he came back from war, because of the GI plan, he managed to buy this plot of land for like $15 an acre in the middle of this big woods in eastern Long Island where I grew up. So it was like a half a mile to the nearest house from where we were. So we were really in the country.
Wow, that's
really
nice.
Really isolated.
That's really nice. I guess you wouldn't think, when you think of New York City, you wouldn't think that there's a lot of room to move around.
Right, that's true. That's true, but it's really true. It was this huge plot of land that during late 1939, 38, the government confiscated all the land, fenced it all off, and used it as a training field for bombers and for airplanes and army and all that. So it was this huge, and it connected to an Air Force base on eastern Long Island. And the house had been built like in 1870 and was very old, and they used it for target practice.
What?
About that? Yeah, they used it for target practice. So when my father bought the house for like $15 an acre, the house had all these bullet holes in it and everything. Oh, yeah. But the reason what happened was it was originally a florist owned the house, and growing plants and everything for a lot of celebrities on eastern Long Island. And they confiscated the land, and he was so upset he just hung himself in the closet.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, so we always speculated that that was the ghost. So we had all these incidents all the time whenever we would go in the basement. It was always very drafty, and there was all these noises all the time and these howlings we would hear.
You would hear,
really think.
You would hear howlings?
Yeah, you'd hear like a howling. Well, generally it was the wind, but mm-hmm. it was a little too defined sometimes, the wind. you know. And I look back on it now, and I say, yeah, that was kind of noise.
Did anybody in your family actually see an apparition?
Yeah, my sisters used to because their room was connected to the closet as well, and they used to say they used to see faces on the wall at night, and they would wake up in the middle of the night and they'd start screaming because they saw this eerie face on the wall. My brother-in-law actually had the best story. He came to stay one night when he was dating one of my sisters, and he was like sleeping on the couch. And what happened when he was sleeping on the couch is all of a sudden he looked up and he saw this white arm beckoning him towards the basement. Now, you know, we never went in the basement by ourselves.
Wow.
So this arm just kept beckoning to the basement. He was said, I sat there and I looked at the thing and I finally said, get away, and it disappeared.
He didn't go down the basement.
No, he didn't go down the basement.
Wonder what he would have found if he went down there. See, that would have been another chapter for you. You should have said,
well,
hey, you should have went down there. I could have wrote another...
Read my book, you'll find out.
Oh, really? It's called The Dubious Mission, and this has been out for about 3 months. You said it was about roughly 3 months, right?
It's about 3 months, yeah. And it's really an adventure book. It's more like an Indiana Jones kind of book, and it's about finding the original history of the Aryan tablet.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, what it's about. And the Nazis find it in 1936, and they hatch this big plot to bring it to America. And the guy who is charged with this brings this tablet to the old house where I grew up, where he grew up as well, because he was originally an American. And that's how the plot starts. And the whole book is about trying to bring out this tablet because he's dying and he wants to bring it out. So that's why it's a dubious mission. Is it the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do?
And what is there something unique about this tablet?
It's got the original history of the Aryan race. I think if you know history, they have never found an actual history of the Aryan race.
Right.
They know very little about them, only from other people. And so in the book, they find this tablet.
But I've seen this on the History Channel. But I saw that, didn't Hitler believe, I don't know if this is part of it, that they came from like a space race of supreme people?
Well, there are stories that he believed that, but what he really believed was they were purebred Aryans. And so that was what he was always searching for, was purebred. So the word Aryan means pure to most white supremacists who are very popular today. I mean, there's quite a few white supremacists. So in my book, the white supremacists say, hey, we've got to get this tablet and bring it out so then the white people can take over the world. So it's very timely because we're seeing a lot of, problems in the world because of white supremacists and illegal aliens and all of that. In any case, so they find the tablet and he wants to bring it out, so he hatches a plot to bring it out because he can't himself, because he's like 98 years old.
Mm.
And everybody's chasing after this tablet. In the middle is this, this middle-aged businessman who has no clue what's going on, but he's in the middle of the whole thing because he grew up in the house.
Mm.
That's the whole point. And in the end, they bring out the tablet. And the ghosts come out and all of that.
Really?
Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
What made you come up with an idea about an Aryan tablet and all that?
I've always been a history buff.
Okay.
And so I've always studied history. I have a degree in history, believe it or not.
Mm.
And I work in business, but there you go.
Mm-hmm.
But I did. I always have had a belief in history, and the World War II was very fascinating to me. The Nazis were very fascinating. The fact that history repeats itself is very fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And most people who have degrees of hate and malice towards people, it's environmental. I mean, you're not born hating people. You develop that.
So you think we're all kind of born with what I would call a divine spark within inside of us, and that can be altered.
Absolutely. Well, I think there's a difference between being predisposed to the paranormal and not.
Mm.
There are people who just refuse to believe that there's anything out there besides themselves, but there are people who are predisposed.
Mm.
And I think the people who are predisposed have a little different point of view. I feel I'm probably predisposed because I've seen these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really true. So I think if you're predisposed, you have a different viewpoint. You say, there's something bigger than us out there, and it exists in the world, and you have to deal with it. You have to deal with it. And in our case, we dealt with it. I mean, the ghost that we dealt with in our house, I mean, he did all kinds of things. He moved pictures, he opened doors, and the front door would just open in the middle of the day, you know, just no wind, no nothing.
And you never, were you guys afraid to be in that house?
No. Well, we were afraid to go in the basement, I will tell you that, as kids. But the rest of the time, we were not really afraid. We were just always aware. And we tried not to be by ourselves. In other words, nobody stayed home by themselves. I'll tell you that.
Now, what do you think, just curious, what do you think a ghost is? What do you think that is?
Well, I think it's the spirit of people. I mean, it's the spirit. It's the consciousness or the unconsciousness of a person that is that still exists. I mean, that did, for whatever reason, didn't go to wherever it's going in the future, and it's still kind of hanging around for some reason. And I don't think, you know, I'm not smart enough to know exactly why, but I'm pretty sure it exists because I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen all of this happening. And by the way, the house. You know, you've heard of the Amityville Horror, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, we were about 50 miles east of where Amityville was, and that came out when I was already in college, all about that. But that house still exists. It's still there on Eastern Long Island. And the owners, after my parents sold it, the first owners moved in and a month later moved out.
No kidding.
When they bought it, yeah, they couldn't take it.
Now, what did you think about... I'm sorry. What did you think about the Amityville Horror? Because I heard that was kind of a hoax.
Well, I think there is an Amityville house that has horror. I mean, the media and you know, people have a tendency to build it up more than it really is.
Right.
But I believe there was some sort of spirit in there. Although my experience has not been that they have been aggressive trying to hurt you. They're more just trying to let you know they're around.
And I'm sure there are some, you know, I got to believe that there are some that are angry and may be able to do some things to you and even chase you around, follow you to different locations. But the blood on the walls, like with the Amityville Horror, of course, that's the movie, you know.
I think that's a movie. Yeah.
And, you know, there was also some speculation afterwards that I heard about that they said they made a lot of dough by coming forward and talking about that. So that's when you start to wonder... Okay, what's going on here?
Right.
But, you know, a lot of ghost stories are very similar, Gerald. It's like, I saw something. It was very brief. Yeah, it scared me a little bit because I didn't know what it was.
Right.
And it was gone, just like that.
Right.
And, you know, when I hear a lot of that, then it kind of makes me realize that's kind of the standard story that most people have. You know, I've seen ghosts myself. I've even seen an apparition one time in my life. I was... We were living in town. I'm doing the show out of Escanaba, Michigan. You're in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
We lived in town. We live out in the country now. But we lived in town, and we had a dwelling where the house had like a split level, and the basement was where the bedrooms were. And I would get up early because I have to work the morning show, and I would go sneak up to, you know, kind of quietly walk up and take a shower, come back down, maybe put some clothes in the clothes hamper. And I would glance every so often. You know, you walk by the bedroom, you look in there. My wife's sleeping, and I'm just trying to be quiet. And I look in there, and there's somebody kneeling over her. Not kneeling over, but bent over, like staring almost at her face. His head is real close to her, and his body is bent over. And I can see the whole body except maybe the feet.
Wow.
And it's just for a split second. It's not like, oh, he cut off his head and chased me around the building. No, it was more like a car went by, and the lights came in the room, and then he disappeared with the lights. And I thought, well, it's just a car. And it's like, how does a car form that kind of shape, you know, with the headlights?
Yeah.
So for years, I excused it away, even though we heard other things. There were like noises and things that were very unusual. And did you do that too? I mean, dismiss it away for a while?
Well, of course. I mean, we used to go to the library and we'd read books, and they'd say, "Oh, it's swamp gas. It's weather. It's you know, some kind of balloon, you know, caused all this." We had a million excuses, but the reality was there was something there. I mean, honestly, I think there was whatever was there was searching for something itself. In other words, it was trying to reach out, but didn't know how or couldn't didn't have the ability to really do it. So it was just trying to make you notice that it's there.
You think it was trying to get help to find its way? Is it possible that it was trying to find its way to the next place? I mean, do they seek us out to try to find that? Or?
Yeah, well, I think that's what I believe. I believe that they were looking for some place, some way, some exit to another dimension or another life, and you know, somebody holds the key to it, but we don't know. The only thing I know for sure is that house, as I mentioned, is still there, and the next owner that moved in after the first owner died. He had a heart attack 3 weeks after he lived in the house.
Hmm.
And a landscaping company moved in as a business. They moved in as a business, and they immediately went bankrupt because the owner had to be taken out to an asylum because he went crazy. I mean, the house has this long history, and
your house is cursed, man. Your house
exactly, exactly. So, well, I always thought that it was probably whatever spirit is in that house is just keeps coming out, and a lot of people who can't deal with it, who haven't, you know, grew up with it,
right,
so to say, couldn't deal with it. So, you know, that's kind of how I saw everything, and so I always knew about these things, and I never talked about it much because people would think I was crazy.
Right.
But I think in today's world, I think we have a little bit more
absolutely
feelings about these things. We understand that these things actually happen. I mean, there's many shows on television about paranormal.
Right.
Sometimes I watch these shows and I go, "Hey, these people don't know anything." They really don't. So when I wrote my book, A Dubious Mission, I decided to include that in the plot because it really did fit very well with the whole plot, and it's pretty interesting.
We're going to take a break. Gerald Kubicki out of Las Vegas, The Dubious Mission. Your website, do you have a website at all, Gerald?
It's GeraldJKubickiBooks.com.
Out there. You know, I think it's kind of neat that the author, Gerald Kubicki, who wrote the book, The Dubious Mission, there's also kind of an underlying truth to what he's trying to tell you, even though it's fiction. I just think that's kind of neat, because I think how many other people are trying to get a message out, and maybe a lot of times people don't even realize it. And he takes history that maybe some of us aren't aware of because we haven't studied it like he has and kept track of it, certain eras especially that people are drawn to, and brings some of those things out. And that's neat. I always like that, because I just think we miss so much, you know. And so maybe you'll enjoy the book if you get it. And it's kind of neat that he also is inspired to write about some of his own true experiences, especially with ghosts. Next week, this is a show, I don't know, it really rocked my world, because either I'm really waking up to some things that are just zapping me, or I don't know. We'll talk to Teresa, and Teresa is out of Detroit, and she has this ability and I only found this out through somebody I know, and they were telling me about, we were talking about stuff, as I always do, and I found out about Teresa, and it's kind of a neat story. And then I found out she has this ability, or she claims to have this ability, and you don't really know for sure. But I guess, you know, there's only one way to find out. And then she told me some things about myself, which I've known in my heart to be true the last few years. I haven't felt this way my whole life, but in the last 5 years or so, I really have felt this way. And she confirmed it without knowing anything about me. So, lucky coincidence, maybe not. We'll talk more to her next week. It's about past lives. So if you're into that, and even if you're not, why not come along for the ride? Thanks for listening to Out There.
It's Out There. Out There. Out There. Out
There. His name is Gerald Kubicki, and he's out of Las Vegas, but originally lived in New York on Long Island in a house that was haunted. You know, and we were talking before the break, and we'll get back to your book and what it's all about. But just recently, I just think this is really cool when people open up and share something personal. Because to me, you know, you can see all this stuff on TV, like you said, and you wonder if people know what they're doing or if it's real. And it's nice to hear firsthand, I think, from people, just regular folks that have had experiences. There's a guy I just met last week. We were working on a commercial here at the radio station. He basically, him and his mother just took over a business that they felt they needed to adjust things because it wasn't going in the right direction. He was telling me, we got on the subject, which of course I always kind of lean in that direction, Gerald.
I try to dig
that out of people if they want. And he was telling me that his brother passed away. Now, this fellow was maybe 30 years old. And his brother passed away and hadn't led a really good life. And right after he passed, and I guess his two children, I don't know if they had an accident or whatever, but the couple of the children passed away as well. And they were driving along, and the kids, his own kids, looked out the window and saw his brother and the two kids flying, according to these kids, flying wow. next to the car. And he said, you know, we looked out, him and his wife, we didn't see anything. He says, but I knew he was around because he was always punching me. I could always feel him. And he was a troubled soul. Well, then he tells me, and this is what I think is so cool. His mother and himself both had a dream, and he came to him, this brother came to him in a dream and said, you know what? I wasn't such a great guy when I was alive. And I was in purgatory, if you want to call it that. And
right.
I had to figure some things out. Now I found my way. I'm fine. Don't worry about me. So I just thought, boy, I've never heard somebody tell me that somebody came to him, a spirit. And I'm not saying that this ghost that was in your house, or maybe there's more than one, for all we know, right?
Right. We're only now, yeah.
And they may just be lost, or they just can't figure out, how do I go on to the next place? How do you do that? Where's the white light? How come it's not coming for me?
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I actually believe they're trying to find something or communicate something so that they can't, the door is not unlocked for them until they can reach that. And you know, the question is, how long do they have to do this? I mean, is it 1 minute? Is it 1 year? Is it 100 years? Is it a million years?
Or
I mean,
what if they're
a ghost? What does it matter?
What if they just have to forgive themselves? I've heard this from other people that do ghost investigations. They got to forgive something or overcome something that they've had their whole lifetime. And
right.
until you take that next step, you're kind of stuck. And
that's right.
There was a woman that wrote a book and it talked about some of that stuff. So that's why I kind of think, maybe that's possible. Anyway, getting back to the dubious mission, white supremacists are trying to find this tablet about the Aryan race. Now, who wrote this tablet? Where does that come from?
Well, the tablet was in the book. It's found in India, northern India, 1936, which is when the Aryans lived in an area around northern India and Iran. And like I said, there's little known about them because they had no written language. But other people had come in contact with them. And in the book, somebody had written down the true history of the Aryan race, and they find in a tavern in this buried city. There's many buried cities in the northern deserts of India, you know, that have been around for thousands of years. And so they believe that by bringing this tablet out, this is during World War II, just before 1939, roughly. They believe that bringing it to the United States, most people don't know this, but about 20% of the United States was German in that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nazi Party was a very big party. In New York City alone, there were 300,000 registered Nazis in New York City. You know that?
You know what's really unique about this, Gerald, is that my mom came over from Germany right after World War II. She was 14 years old when the war was going on. So I have kind of a firsthand experience of a lot of things that took place, at least from her perspective. Is somebody shooting at you there?
No, I have no idea what that was. I think the cat hit a door stopper and made that thing go. So they believe that it's a plot by Hitler. He believes that he brings his tablets to the United States and proves that the Aryans are the superior race. All the white people in the world will raise up and not want to fight Germany during World War II, and that would stop the war or prolong long enough for him to reach the goals he's intended. Mm. That's really how it starts, and so they elicit a gentleman who is in Germany right now with his mother, who was actually born in the United States in that haunted house, and so he's supposed to bring it back to the United States. So what I do is I sprinkle a lot of history in there that things that actually happened. For example, there was a the Nazis had a submarine surface off of Long Island in 1942, and they actually had spies. They took off the submarine, came to the United States to try to sabotage our war effort, and that really happened. So I sprinkle that in there, that things, all kinds of history like that, that people just don't know. So here's what's really true. The history of the war changed in 1998. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. What do you mean?
Well, in 1998, Bill Clinton signed the War Documents Act. What that did is that released 3 million top secret documents that had been hidden since World War II. So when people started reading those documents, what they found out is a lot of things about the war changed. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were different. For example, that was when we discovered that Julia Child was actually an agent for the United States, and David Niven and all the...
Mm-hmm.
You remember hearing about all that?
I heard some of that, yes. Yeah, and some of our Hollywood stars who were involved in things...
Exactly.
In a very patriotic cause.
Exactly.
And then there were also those that our history kind of covered up about that were very sympathetic.
Exactly, yeah. So a lot of the history changed. I mean, there's a gentleman named Wilhelm Canaris. Now, he was head of the German Amwar, which was the military counterpart to the SS. Now, he was like the number three, number four Nazi in the whole regime, and yet he was not a Nazi at all, and in fact, he was attempted to assassinate Hitler 7 times, they know of. In addition, he ran an entire organization that were bringing Jews out of Europe, and he contacted the United States many times to try to get the United States to negotiate a peace with Germany. I mean, he was a different person. He was a Prussian, and they believed in doing things the right way, even though they were at war.
Mm.
So, I grew up believing that he was a real bad guy, and when I found out about all these documents, I started to read them, and I understood that he was actually a good guy, trying to do the best for his country.
Right.
And so a lot of history actually changed. So I have a lot of that kind of information in the book that people would never know otherwise.
And that's important to get out, don't you think, Gerald?
Oh, sure. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover, we talk about J. Edgar Hoover. He took credit, and you even see it on the History Channel, where they talk about, they caught all these spies for Germany, and he took credit for it. And he said, we did it through investigation. Well, that's not true. What actually happened was this guy Canaris cabled J. Edgar Hoover and said, I have sent Germany has sent 9 spies, and here's where they are. 3 are in Jacksonville, 3 are in New York City, and 3 are Long Island. Here's where they're staying. So that's actually how they were caught.
Hmm. Yeah. Isn't it funny?
We don't know this. We didn't know this until just recently.
You know,
those are the kinds of things I put in my book.
You know, and the funny thing is, and I don't know, you're probably not aware of, or maybe you are, I don't know how far you go into history, but there's a group that meets here in Upper Michigan, and they meet all over the country. They're ancient archaeologists,
right.
And they believe in this area and other parts of the country that we were visited way before Columbus, and there seems to be some artifacts to support that.
Right.
Going back thousands of years, and not too many people want to hear that, but you start to realize that our whole history, not all of it, but a lot of it is a farce, or maybe a farce.
It is. Well, here's a very interesting point. The Nazi symbol, you know what that is, right?
Mm-hmm.
The swastika. Well, that symbol they have found it in America in many of the Indian tribes' culture going back 3,000 years.
And what do you think that symbol was used for?
Well, the Hindus use it too. The Hindus it's in the Hindu religion. It's actually a lucky charm in the Hindu religion, and they have even a symbol that, or a god. His name is Ganshi, and he's a representative of that symbol. So
his name isn't Adolf, you're saying?
No, it's not. The point is that symbol has been around for a very long time, and they have found it for thousands of years before it was ever used by the Nazis.
Hmm.
In fact, the Nazis actually switched the ends of the swastika around.
They went the other way. They went the other way at one point. Yep.
Exactly. But Hitler used that symbol because it was so well known And he thought that that would be a symbol that people would represent all the people. But, you know, the symbol goes back thousands and thousands of years.
Now,
yeah, that's probably true.
And you talked about, you and I just briefly talked about this, and we're kind of hinting around that we really need to know and understand history. Otherwise, we're kind of doomed to repeat
right.
it over and over
right.
again, don't we?
Well, I've said this, and I say it in my book, history repeats itself. You have to recognize that. And so you have to recognize signs. So part of the message in my book is look around you today. You're seeing many cases of white supremacy coming back. And by the way, supremacy is not just white. Every culture has supremacy. Of course, we live in America, so we talk about white supremacy. But, you know, there's a lot of white supremacy groups. There's roughly 250 white supremacy groups that the FBI knows about right now, but in the United States. Many of them are small, but who knows how many there are that are not small, and they could be anybody that you could run across. And typically, they have the tattoo of an Aryan or the swastika on them, and, you know, we call them skinheads, neo-Nazis, Ku Klux Klan. These are all white supremacy groups, and they are very strong right now, particularly if you live in areas where I live in, like in southeast United States, where you're getting this illegal alien influx. There are currently roughly 12 million illegal aliens in the United States. Most of them are down here. And so you run into a cultural shock because there's whole sections of cities and things where you think you're back in Mexico. And so there's people fighting back on that because, you know, they believe they're taking their jobs, they're not paying taxes, all of these things. It's a very common occurrence.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if you know this, but in New Mexico, you can actually get a driver's license if you're an illegal alien. How can you do that?
Yeah.
Well, does that sound right?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
So I talk about those kinds of things as well. And I'm not anywhere near a white supremacist, but I do recognize who they are and talk about them in my book.
You kind of balance it out and look at both sides of the issue, right?
Exactly. Well, yeah, you have to look at both sides of the issue because when people are frustrated, when they feel that they are threatened, when they have nothing, they tend to have to blame somebody.
Right.
So that's kind of how it all starts.
And it seems as when there's more chaos, that's when people rise up, whether they're doing it for the right reason
right.
or not. And we have so many things, so many issues.
Right.
We just recently had an election. I don't know whether or not this is going to change things. I would hope. You know, I always want to have hope. But how many times in our history have we seen this happen? Gerald, where one, let's say it's the Democrats get in and everybody's
right.
excited and
right.
then nothing gets accomplished. And
right.
so what happens next term?
Right. Well, yeah. The history has said that we have come with people who eventually reach a resolve and they say we have to do things. I mean, we have several of those people. I mean, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Ronald Reagan, Teddy Roosevelt. These were all people who came in under extremely bad circumstances and managed to fix things.
It's almost.
I lived in New York City in 1972, and we had the Iran oil embargo. And if you think that wasn't scary, you're wrong. I mean, I used to have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get $5 worth of gas on alternate days, and on line for 3 hours to get $5 worth of gas. That's how it was.
Right. And it seems like, I was just going to say, it seems like it almost takes us getting to that point
right.
before something comes forward and maybe
right.
change is made. It's
right.
like all this bickering, egos have to be put aside for the
exactly.
greater good. And most
exactly.
of us, I hate to say it, but most of us are in love with our own egos or they control us. And I'm not even just talking people that are in love with their egos, but ego is
right.
so sneaky. It controls us in so many ways. Oh, no, no, you're evil because you're a Democrat. Oh, no, no, no. We have to look past all that.
That's correct.
In order to
that's
move
correct.
Forward. So I'm really...
Well, I think it's all about people, about real people. And, I've been a Republican most of my life, but I started off as a Democrat. That's pretty normal, okay? And yet I've been on both sides of the fence on any individual election because I think it's more about the person than the party.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'm right down the middle. I'm an independent.
Right.
I'm going to listen to what they both have to say. I'm going to watch. More importantly, I'm going to watch what they do before
right.
I, before hopefully if you've got to make a decision on them, or at least
right.
see a track record. if they actually follow through with what they do, or do they just toe the line? Like most of them feel like they have to. Anyway, I don't want to get into politics. The Dubious Mission. Get the book. Yeah. You can find it where? Amazon? Anywhere?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, online. Go to my website. It has links to it, and you can buy it online as well. You can buy it in Kindle, hardcover, or softcover.
And he's written some other books as well. Gerald, what else do you have?
The books are a continuation of what I started in the first book, and my second book's about finding a copy of Mein Kampf that has 7 additional pages in it. Mm. Find it in the jungles of Mindanao in Philippines.
Why do you think you have such a connection to this culture, the German culture, and
well, this was more about Japanese.
Oh, the Mein.
The German book is found, but the Japanese are really, really the players in this book because they find it in the holdings of Japanese soldiers.
But why do you think you have such a connection to that time period?
Like I said, I am a history buff. I think I constantly run across information that other people don't know. For example, there are still Japanese soldiers fighting in the jungles of Mindanao.
You know, I've heard that.
That's true. There's 34 of them still that they know of right now that are still listed as being roaming the countryside.
Those guys got to be pretty old, don't you think?
Well, they're in their high 80s. But you see, the emperor said to them, and the emperor's a god, and the emperor said to them, you will not give up. You will fight until I tell you to come home. And so they are. That's true.
Well, those dang Americans better get here one of these days.
Yeah, but when I read that, when I was reading about that and doing research on it, I was just shocked because it's very apparently it's fairly common. It's happened quite a bit. And so I included that in my book. But my connection is the fact that history does repeat itself. And again, you know, my goal is to just inform people about, you know, what actually is going on in the world in terms of white supremacy, in terms of fascism, in terms of people who hate other people. And I think that's very timely today because we can be very emotional about all the things going on in America right now.
Right, and you know what? It's something that's been going on probably since the beginning of man.
People have
found a way to hate each other, and if we just could get past that and realize we're all from the same place, in my opinion, and, you know, hate doesn't conquer things. Actually, love does, in my opinion.
Exactly. Well, love and understanding. You have to understand.
Knowledge. Some knowledge, right?
Knowledge. Exactly. So that's what I'm hoping to do, is give people the knowledge so they can recognize what's going on. And they're fun. They're meant to be adventures. They're meant to be books where you sit down and an hour later you look up and say, wow, I never read a book this long.
Well, that's cool.
And that's what it does. It does do that.
Maybe someday they'll turn it into a movie.
I would hope.
Gerald J. Kubicki Books.com, right? Kubicki?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's right.
GeraldJKubickiBooks.com. That's his website. The name of the book is The Dubious Mission. It is a fictional book, but it also has a mixture of some reality. His own experiences that he had with spirits when he was growing up. And I thank you very much for being on my show today.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.